This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning at 6:06 on this Friday morning, November 22nd, 2024. It's another beautiful day to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network or on the Civic Media app, or listening by podcast or watching us on social media. We appreciate you starting your day right here. I got a question for you. How would you rate your winter driving skills? Because if I'd have asked that question yesterday, a lot of folks would have said, oh, they're fine. And they'd have been wrong based on all the DOT camera footage that people were stringing together of all the slide-offs and spin-outs and crashes across Wisconsin and Minnesota over the past 24 hours or so as the snow was falling. So, Hey, take it easy out there on the roads. Don't go as fast as you normally do. Trust me, there were just hundreds of incidents across the two states the past day or two. And while we don't have any snowstorms in our forecast anytime soon, I think this week's dose of snow was a reminder to take it easy as we head into this next season here. Coming up on the program this morning, you'll recall that yesterday we heard from Kia Vakil, our colleague for Courier Newsroom in Los Angeles, before he was going to take a break. Joe Zepecki's already on his post-election break. And you're wondering, okay, well, what are we doing today? And I promised you something special, and you're going to get it, as four of my Courier Newsroom colleagues, all from swing states, North Carolina, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Arizona, will join me to talk about Election Day, talk about how there was such a split decision in the states where Democrats did relatively well, except at the top of the ticket. Why was that? We'll hear from some of my Courier Newsroom friends all about that. In our second hour, we will talk to former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, as we do every Friday. We will, of course, talk about former Congressman Matt Gaetz, who has withdrawn his nomination to be Trump's Attorney General. But the replacement really isn't any better at all. It's former Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi. The name might ring a bell. The face might ring a bell. If you follow the news closely, you probably have already rolled your eyes at the notion that this woman who torpedoed one investigation of Trump fraud and became one of the super spreaders of the 2020 big lie would be a step away from running the U.S. Department of Justice. So we'll talk to Jim Santel a bit about that. We will talk to Mark Jacob about media coverage this week. And believe it or not, a whole lot of Americans who throughout the year said the economy wasn't doing very well suddenly think the economy is doing pretty well. How could that be? We'll talk to Mark Jacob about that. And we'll talk to Dan Schumacher about sports heading into the weekend, if he wants to, Greg Bach. And it concerns me that one of these times we're going to hit the button and Dan Schumacher's not going to be there. One or two more Bears losses, and he might not have the will to talk about sports anymore.
Well, we had Paul Noonan on from the Acme Packing Company on Matt and Aaron Air yesterday. He said that the Bears aren't as bad as we want to think they are, and they have some shining lights. They just got to, like, harness those things. And I feel like they're just due, you know what I mean? Like, one of these years. And
well, it's like Detroit. Detroit was in the wilderness for a very long time.
Yeah.
And now it's the Bears. The Packers were in the wilderness all throughout the 70s and 80s.
Oh, my God. Oh, God.
Yeah,
the Bach household was an unhappy one back in the 80s with Forrest Gregg as a coach.
Oh, God, Forrest Gregg, yes. So that's Greg Bach there. Tony writing on YouTube, I hope that cool guy Greg makes an appearance. Well, here he is, voila.
I did.
As if on cue, He's going to tell us what to expect at the Laughing Tap this weekend.
This weekend we have Andrea Jin. She's going to be doing four shows, two shows tonight, two shows tomorrow. Get your tickets at laughingtap.com. $22 online, $25 at the door. No drink minimums. A fun time is going to be had by all. Andrea is... she has appeared on The Late Late Show with James Corden, and she is a Juno Award winner, which is Canada's Grammys.
Oh.
She won a Juno for, I believe, Best Comedy Record.
Wow. So yeah. So it's a Grammy A, how they're also referred to.
Yeah. Yeah, they actually hand you the award. It's just covered in fries, cheese curds, and gravy.
And then they apologize, right? Like,
Sorry about that.
Temperatures around the state right now include 37 in Chippewa Falls, Wausau 39, La Crosse 40, Amory's at 35, Wisconsin Rapids 40, Green Bay 43, Madison 42, Waukesha 37, and it's 42 degrees where Greg is at Radio Park in Racine. As we head into this weekend prior to Thanksgiving, and I know that... my lovely bride was already at the grocery store yesterday trying to secure some provisions here before things start to run out. Greg, I know you've got the comedy stuff happening this weekend, but I would imagine, like everybody else, there's a little bit of Thanksgiving prep that's taking place out there as well.
Yeah.
And even if it's just putting up turkey decorations.
We don't do decorations for Thanksgiving at all. In fact, we barely decorate for Christmas because we're never around the house for the holidays. We're at family's houses. Mm-hmm. But I got to start thinking about picking up that turkey from the farm we bought it from. I'm so excited and kind of proud for this year going like local, like real local for our turkey, sourcing it that way. And then I got to get a big old bucket of mac and cheese from Festival Foods and make mashed potatoes. And that's it. We're making the food, but then everybody else provides like a dish or two to pass.
Very nice.
And then my mother-in-law hosts it because I am never hosting Thanksgiving again.
I've heard from a couple of folks now about how mac and cheese is like the big side that they prepare, which I have to say I hadn't heard that as much until fairly recently. Mac and cheese is really coming into its own as a Thanksgiving side.
It's really making its play for the best side.
Because people are used to it. How often do you have stuffing? One day a year.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, why do we have to do all these things that you only have one day a year? A lot of people only have turkey one day a year.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have to do it that way, kids.
I mean, buy yourself a smaller turkey next year in like the, you know, the summer and grill it or something. I don't know. We had this discussion with, I think it was Tony yesterday.
Yes, it was. Yes.
And I understand he doesn't
You're
like
team turkey. I get that.
I am team turkey, but I'm also team good turkey. Like the moment it's bad, I'm like, this sucks.
Tony says, I have stuffing all the time. How dare you, sir?
Well,
I believe directed at me. I did not
know. This was not a personal attack, Tonins.
Yes, I know. Alicia puts on YouTube, I put more into the mac and cheese than I do into any other dish on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Fantastic. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Really I love it.
Coming into its own. Thank you to everybody who has already said that they cast a vote for our final program over at volume1.org, volume1.org. That is the arts and community newspaper in the Chippewa Valley. They've done a Best of the Chippewa Valley survey for years and years, and Up North News Radio is in the running for Best Radio Show in the Chippewa Valley. So we appreciate your support if you go over there and sign up. You have to create an account. It's free. Mm-hmm. But then you can cast a vote, not just for that, but all kinds of other categories that some are very specific to the Chippewa Valley. Well, I'm sure many of them are, but many others you could probably navigate through on your own just fine. We should probably review that more in depth one of these days. Because I know, well, you mentioned being up for an award through Shepherd's Express.
Yeah.
Yep. And I know all these other little papers like to do this as well. So we should have a little fun with that in the coming days. Let's see. What is he? Tony writes, I wrote in the turkey-free Up North News radio show. We're not turkey-free.
We're not turkey-free.
No.
We're accepting of all likes and dislikes. You don't like turkey? You're welcome here. You do like turkey? You're welcome here. You like green bean casserole? Get out of my country.
Hey, remember we were talking about the exotic locations for basketball tournaments?
Yes.
Coming
yes.
up for not just Thanksgiving weekend, but this weekend as well. Let me review them because there's one or two that we hadn't talked about yet.
Yeah.
In part because the Badger women's basketball team was in action last night. They are now 4-1 on the season after defeating the University of Illinois Chicago last night, 61-57 at the Kohl Center. They will host Omaha at the Kohl Center tomorrow afternoon before heading south to play in the Cancun Challenge at the Hard Rock Hotel Riviera Maya, where they'll play Thanksgiving afternoon against San Diego State, along with games on Friday and Saturday. We've mentioned that the Badger men's basketball team is traveling to the Greenbrier Resort in West Virginia for the Greenbrier tip-off. That first game is against the University of Central Florida this afternoon at 4 o'clock, pregame at 3 o'clock on some of these Civic Media stations, including the Civic Media app. Let's see, the Marquette men's basketball team on Saturday morning, tomorrow morning, will face Georgia at the Atlantis Resort on Paradise Island in the Bahamas.
Okay. These kids now, these NCAA players, they have the ability to get paid, right?
Oh, yeah. Paid bigly.
Yeah. And so now they're getting paid, it's like, all right, they can work on Thanksgiving or on holidays. But I feel like, all right, this year you get some fun time. Next year, the tournaments are in Fargo and Kalamazoo.
Well, here, let me give you this. We've told you where the Badger men and women are playing and the Marquette men are playing.
Yeah.
So I went and looked up the Marquette women's basketball team on this Sunday. They're hosting Indiana University of Indianapolis. Yeah. So they'll be in Milwaukee.
There you go.
So you should go support them.
Yeah.
That's how that should work.
Bahamas, my tookus.
The Badger football team plays tomorrow afternoon at Nebraska at 2:30. You can hear that game on Civic Media stations in Amory, Wisconsin Rapids, Racine, Kenosha, and Richland Center. Let's see. The Milwaukee Bucks have a game at home tonight against the Indiana Pacers as part of the in-season tournament. The Packers play Sunday afternoon at 3:25 against the San Francisco 49ers. Catch that game on WRCO in Richland Center, WCQM in Park Falls, WRJN in Racine, Kenosha, but not on the Civic Media app for the Packer game. And then finally, congratulations for three Brewers, or perhaps soon-to-be former Brewers, for getting votes for the National League MVP. Now, obviously, it was no surprise that Shohei Ohtani won the MVP. He got all 30 first-place votes to run away with the award. But catcher William Contreras took fifth place. Willy Adames and Jackson Churio got votes as well. For Adames, I believe it was something like coming in, 10th place in the voting. And Churio did get one 10th place vote to cap off quite a season. At the age of 20, to get a vote in the MVP balloting is pretty cool.
He's going to get that award someday.
Pretty safe bet to make here. We'll unpack some of the morning news coming up in just a bit, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Friday morning when you're here. You're up north. Back in a bit.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Today's history lesson does not contain a mention of Bruce Springsteen, but Stevie Van Zandt, who is singing along there with the boss in the Glory Days video. So that'll be coming up in just a few moments here in a video where Stevie Van Zandt looks like he's having a lot of fun. I mean, the whole Glory Days video is fun, but I'm going to say again, and again, old man alert, looking at how young everybody looked back 40 years ago, just like, oh, look at us. By us, I mean all of us who are now 40 years older than we were back then. Like, you all look so nice.
I was only six.
Anyway, moving on here. You can join the show at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Or, of course, you can join us in the comment section as well, as Alicia did, noting that we are there. We are her only source for sports news, and for Tony as well, who loves the sports talk. Loves when we get
you know what, I guys say the sports talk is so boring. I'll never forget that text message. Oh,
I hope they're still like hate listening to us. Yeah. For that would make me
Marge, they're talking about sports again.
Get in here and listen to this. Let's tell you about the daily newsletter. You can sign up for it at our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe in the top banner. Christina Lori puts that together, and one of the stories she's got in there is about the Polar Express, not the movie, but the actual train. In November and December, the National Railroad Museum in Green Bay kicks off the holiday season with a Polar Express train ride every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. There's some hot cocoa involved and stories and, of course, the train itself. The National Railroad Museum is one of just 39 sites in the U.S. and Canada licensed to host an official Polar Express train ride, and the only location in Wisconsin that does that. It's also the biggest fundraiser of the year for the National Railroad Museum to keep the nonprofit doors open during the quiet months of the year. So check out our newsletter for more about that and how you could take yourself on a little ride with the kids for the holiday season and make the holidays that much more merry. Let's talk for just a bit about Pam Bondi, and we'll do that again next hour with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. But just to pass along the news, if you missed it yesterday, former Congressman Matt Gaetz, who's only been a former congressman for a little bit here. He resigned a few days back after Donald Trump nominated him to be the next attorney general, thinking that that would thwart, and who doesn't love saying that word, thwart the release of a House Ethics Committee report into allegations involving sex with underage girls, sex trafficking, and payoffs to women for sexual favors. It hasn't. The debate, of course, is still going on. Gaetz is radioactive. And finally, yesterday, saw the inevitability and withdrew his name from consideration. Okay, fine. It's not like we had high hopes that Trump would turn to somebody else who would have more credibility. He did not. He turned to former Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi. And for folks who follow the news closely, and I know that's not a ton of people, but for anybody that follows the news closely, I'm sure heard that and said, oh, really? That Pam Bondi? Yes, that Pam Bondi, who at, and again, has that familiar Fox News Trump defender look to her. She was launched into prominence by Sarah Palin, endorsing her when she was running for attorney general. And since that time, she has been a reliable ally of Donald Trump's, most notably when the New York Attorney General's office was investigating Trump University for being a fraud, which it was. It was eventually shut down, like a lot of Trump ventures that turned out just to be, grifts and failures. But much of its operations were in Florida. And the Florida Attorney General's office, run by Pam Bondi, told the New York Attorney General's office, sure, we'll help you with this. Right around that time, Pam Bondi's campaign got a $25,000 check from a Trump enterprise. And to hear somebody at the New York Attorney General's office tell it, they got ghosted after that. Every time they'd reach out to the Florida Attorney General's office, they'd hear nothing. Pam Bondi eventually did not launch any kind of an investigation. The New York Attorney General's office did it on their own successfully and then went after the Trump entity that cut the $25,000 check to Pam Bondi's campaign because it's a nonprofit and it's not supposed to be writing campaign checks. And so inevitably, Trump was fined for that. Again, one of the many, many times that Trump was adjudicated in court as having committed a crime or some kind of a grift that folks just seem to keep brushing off. Perhaps most shamefully, though, in terms of Pam Bondi's qualifications to be attorney general, well, she's not. And it has nothing to do with her being a lawyer, but it's that she helped support and spread the big lie. Donald Trump's claim that the 2020 election had somehow been tainted. She made up assertions about fake ballots that, you know, for Joe Biden that were being poured into tabulation centers. She'd always kind of be very cryptic, saying, well, there seems to be a problem, and yet she never provided any evidence. And I did not go to law school. But if there's one thing I know about lawyers, is if they're asked to produce evidence, if they're making a claim that requires it, they should maybe provide it. And she did not. Because he did not. Because there wasn't any. And let's just say it and be crystal clear about it. Anybody who helped Donald Trump spread a lie about undermining election integrity from 2020 has no business being attorney general, has no business being in charge of the United States Department of Justice. The bottom line is, because she was seen as more palatable than Matt Gaetz, there won't be any Republican senators that stand up against her. She's going to get in. She's going to be the attorney general. She's going to do whatever Donald Trump wants her to do to weaponize the Department of Justice. And real Americans, law-abiding Americans, law-abiding groups are going to be hurt as she and Trump use the Department of Justice for personal vendettas rather than upholding the rule of law. And that should be concerning to everybody. But as we saw from the election results, it will not be concerning to everybody. We will talk more about those results with four of my colleagues from Courier Newsroom in swing states around the country coming up right after this. You're up north.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
All right, now this is a new treat. This is normally where you would hear Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil, but of course he was on yesterday getting set to start his post-election vacation. I promised y'all something special, and have I ever got it. From Courier Newsroom, I have got four of my colleagues from the other state-based newsrooms. There are 11 total. Joining us from the Gander in Michigan is Kyle Kaminsky. From the Cardinal and Pine in North Carolina is Billy Ball. From the Keystone in Pennsylvania is Sean Kitchen. And from the Copper Courier in Arizona is Cam Stevenson. Gentlemen, it's so good to see y'all. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be on.
Billy, let me start with you because you also had that very colorful gubernatorial candidate there in North Carolina who said something like, you know, some people just need a killing. And so for folks in Wisconsin who weren't following it, he did not succeed in winning the governor's race, correct?
He did not. He didn't even come close, which is unusual in the state of North Carolina. It's probably a testament to the fact that the things that Donald Trump can get away with saying doesn't always apply to everyone else. And it didn't apply for Robinson. He lost by a bunch.
And Cam, in Arizona, you had Carrie Lake running again, and she fell. Did she also fall well short of winning?
Not as far from grace as what happened in North Carolina. She did lose Ruben Gallego, but she did get more votes than Kamala Harris.
Okay.
So it was pretty close.
And in Michigan, Kyle, there was a U.S. Senate race.
That's right. Alyssa Slotkin pulled out ahead over Republican Mike Rogers to fill the open Senate seat. Pretty significant win in a sea of not so many wins for Democrats. But
right. Well, and in, of course, in Wisconsin, you had Tammy Baldwin winning, even though Trump won the state as well. Sean, I believe from a Senate race standpoint, you're the one thing that's not like the others.
Yeah, I think, well, it was a really bad night in general for Pennsylvania. Senator Casey looks like he's about to lose. It's still going through a recount right now, but Senator Casey's trailing Dave McCormick by less than 17,000 votes in a recount. But it's going to be a really long shot if Casey's going to pull it out.
Okay, so you're the exception to the rule, but let me come to the rule. And Billy, I'll come back to you for starters. In all of these other states where Trump won the swing state, but there was still a marquee race where the Democrat won, do you have a particular theory on why that was, as far as were people like splitting their ticket on purpose because they wanted a sense of balance, or did they just look at it from a personality standpoint, how do you explain the split vote in your state?
You know, North Carolina is famous for split tickets. Like it's one of the things we do. We for years we've had folks here who hop into races, who hop into elections, and they'll vote for a far right Republican and then go down the ballot and vote for someone who's a moderate to liberal Democrat. It's something that we do. And the governor's race, as you can see in years past, we've had a Democrat governor, a Republican lieutenant governor. North Carolina does it a lot. I think this one is a little bit outside the norm because Mark Robinson was such a toxic candidate.
Yes, he was a little bit different there. And Cam, in Arizona, what do you attest kind of the split decision?
It's a lot of things out here. Our Senate candidate had a different level of toxicity than what you saw in North Carolina. Carrie Lake had just spent the past 4 years burning through any goodwill she had with the Arizonans. And so people were very happy to vote for Ruben Gallego. He also appealed to a more populist working class message. You know, most of his events were at like local boxing clubs or places where you could just hang out and chat and talk. And so I think from talking with people, they felt more comfortable voting for Ruben Gallego. They didn't know much about Harris. They know they didn't like Trump, but they felt that, I think what you mentioned, if they voted for Trump and Gallego, that would give the sense of balance in some way.
Sure. Kyle, I think of Michigan as especially swingy because you've really have gone back and forth in terms of Republican governors, Republican control of the legislature. Last time around, though, it was a Democratic trifecta. This time around, it was split. What's your take on all of that?
I mean, we had a similar split ticket situation here. A lot of voters who supported Slotkin for Senate didn't back Harris for president. I think this suggests that many Michiganders aren't looking at the candidates, are looking at the candidates individually rather than voting along strict party lines. Slotkin ran a pretty smart campaign focused on kitchen table issues like healthcare, manufacturing jobs, infrastructure, and it was clear that kind of made the difference in the campaign. She was able to connect with voters that were kind of outside those areas that traditionally leaned blue, farmers in rural areas, auto workers in small towns. And it really highlighted the ability to make politics feel personal this time around. It wasn't just about policy. It was about trust, shared experiences, listening to what people needed.
And Sean, in Pennsylvania, again, Senate race notwithstanding, it is a state that is pretty well known for ticket splitting, yes?
Yeah, I mean, I think we saw a lot of that in this election. There was a drop-off between Trump and McCormick. I think you saw that in the other states, with the Senate races, the drop-off between Trump and the next Republican candidate. And I think Casey just wasn't able to pull it off. I think he was just the casualty of Democrats just not doing well, like an anti-incumbent wave that happened here in Pennsylvania.
Now let's go to the top of the ticket here, because it felt like Kamala Harris was here all the time. And if she wasn't, then Tim Walz was. And it felt like there was all of this momentum. And now, of course, we're into the season of second guessing. That's fine. We'll do it for this segment here. And I'll kick it off by saying, and again, no, there's no one right answer, but I certainly hear a lot of folks here thinking that if, especially with Tim Walz being from the state next door, that if he'd have kept up that populist message, you know, that corporations have been price gouging and we need to do that, but that after the Kamala Harris Donald Trump debate, they kind of pulled back on that and they kind of played it too safe. Now, again, I don't know if that's right or wrong, but that was the impression I got of maybe what the Harris-Walz ticket could have done differently in Wisconsin. Billy, do you think that there's anything that explains where the Harris-Walz ticket might have done things differently in your state?
I think that, you know, just like y'all in your swing states, we saw a lot of them. We saw a lot of the candidates, and the messaging was, you know, remarkably disciplined, I thought. And for what it's worth, I know there are going to be a lot of people who second guess what Harris's campaign did. But I, you know, for the situation that she was put in partway through a presidential election year, she did a remarkable job of galvanizing people and getting them out. Honestly, I don't know if there was something she could have said or done much differently in a year when people just weren't happy with how much they were paying at the grocery store. And I think that there are, you know, one of the problems with that is I flat out don't think that traditional media explained very well how inflation worked or how it was impacting people or what the candidates' policies were going to do along that. But I think that was a big thing there. And so I'm not so much critiquing the Harris campaign. I'm sure there are things she could have done differently. I'm sure folks down in Pennsylvania wonder why their governor wasn't selected as the VP pick. I'm sure that's coming up a lot with the Democrats there. But I think here it was just a wave of people who are tired of how much things cost. It's hard to win an election when inflation was as bad as it was at the beginning of Biden's term.
Sean, do you feel that there is still second guessing that Josh Shapiro wasn't chosen to be the running mate, or were there other reasons why the Harris-Walz ticket fell short there, or was the year simply out of their control?
I think it was just out of control, out of their everyone's control. I don't think Shapiro would have made a difference in Pennsylvania, or with the other tickets. Like, I mean, if it came down to just Pennsylvania, I think you could probably second guess not picking Shapiro, but we lost, you know, the Harris campaign lost a lot of the swing states. But Shapiro was also very supportive and campaigning around the clock for Democrats and for Harris in the final month, 6 weeks out of the election, going to a lot of different things. With regards to the campaign, I don't know if they could have done anything different. I personally thought it was an interesting choice for them to have two or three high-profile Republicans for Harris events in the Philadelphia suburbs when they didn't have any rallies with base supporters, base Democrats in the final weeks of the election.
That is a point that's come up a lot. Is what was too much effort put into reaching out to, you know, what they hoped would be enough moderate Republicans, and again getting away from that core message for progressives. All right, rather than beat a dead horse, we'll move on to another point here for Kyle and Cam. Let's go with just the year itself, covering the campaign, either, you know, personally, event that you went to, folks that you met, or things that you saw while you were working with the team at your own newsroom. What's going to stand out for you in terms of the way that you covered and your team covered the 2024 campaign? Let's start in Michigan there, Kyle.
I'm trying to think of a moment that stood out to me from this election cycle, and it has to be at the when it was pretty clear that Trump was going to win at the end of the night. I was in Detroit at the Michigan Democratic Party's watch party. Talked to a lot of voters. There was just kind of a mix of determination and this sense of disillusionment, I guess, among Democrats who realized how much work it takes to maintain this progress and how fragile it can be. So it was a big reminder for me that every election is a chance to kind of learn, adapt, understand the pulse of the electorate, and realize how we can repeatedly get it wrong. So that was one big takeaway.
We've definitely learned that. We've learned again how easy it is to get things wrong. Cam, what'll stand out for you when you look back at 2024?
Yeah, I mean, I think our strengths in reporting really shone through when we focused on tangible issues over the idealism of some more established candidates. You know, during the state legislature, we covered very heavily a series of abortion bans that went into effect and then didn't go into effect, and were able to break that down very clearly. Similarly, when we got into our ballot, we had 13 ballot propositions that were there. And so when we took the time to break those down individually for people, that felt like a valuable service. When we were working, you know, when we were covering campaigns and talking about these vague concepts of working class and we're going to help people afford houses and we're going to build a million houses, those sound like very lofty ideals that I think people kind of disassociate with or just see as a run-of-the-mill promise. Whereas when we were able to kind of talk about things that they saw on their ballot and things that they could vote on, that's where it felt like we were making a real impact, and that's where we received the most gratitude from our readers.
Sounds good. Sean, looking back at the year, what are you going to remember?
I'm going to remember just going to a lot of the different events and meeting people. Pennsylvania is a very big state, and going to events from pretty much like from Pittsburgh all the way through northeastern Pennsylvania, and getting to talk to hundreds of voters or thousands of voters, like just being able to and also like relay their messages. Personally, one of the things I thought was interesting, just doing my first time working a cycle like this, was just getting to meet a lot of the national and local reporters at all the different events, mm-hmm. and being able to like pick their brains on things.
Billy, we'll wrap up with you. What are you going to remember from the year of campaigning?
You know, despite all the doom and gloom that a lot of Democrats are feeling right now after the presidential election, North Carolina Democrats had a pretty good night. And I think that that's something that they're going to be talking about here for a few years. We saw one of the smallest shifts to Republicans of any state in this election. Won not only the governor's race, lieutenant governor, secretary of state. It looks like Democrats are going to pull out a really enormous seat on the state Supreme Court, which, given all of our huge issues with gerrymandering in this state, that's a big deal down the road. So I think what I will recall is that just like Cam and a lot of these other editors are saying, we focused on the less of the personalities and more of the issues that are affecting people at home. As I mentioned before, the grocery prices, trying to explain stuff like that, trying to explain the impact of tariffs. And really, quite honestly, if I hate to beat a dead horse, but explaining the things that traditional and legacy media did a awful job of explaining, yes, during this election, and they tend to do. So I'll be proud of that. And I think where we go from here in North Carolina is, the road is not so dim, to be honest.
The media coverage we're going to talk about in depth next hour, as always, on Fridays with Mark Jacobs, so stick around for that. Billy Ball from the Cardinal and Pine in North Carolina, Sean Kitchen from the Keystone in Pennsylvania, Kyle Kaminsky from the Gander in Michigan, Cam Stevenson from the Copper Courier in Arizona. You can catch all of their work. You can get to all of their sites by going to couriernewsroom.com. Gentlemen, thank you. So great to see you all. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thanks. You too.
We'll be back with more after this and today's history lesson and more. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas, but we do not know to where he has proceeded. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th President of the United States.
There's Walter Cronkite announcing the assassination and the death of John F. Kennedy. Friday, November 22nd, 1963, 61 years ago, it has been, even for somebody like me, born the next year, it's been part of our lives ever since. Either everybody we know has a story or knows somebody who has a story about that fateful day. Yeah, we talk about Pearl Harbor. We talk about 9/11. That one, I think, stands on its own, the assassination of an American president.
Mm-hmm. In the television age, I mean, that's just, I couldn't even imagine. I mean, I remember 9/11. I remember the Challenger explosion as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Like, I don't even know. Like I couldn't imagine in today's day and age of 24 hours news. I mean, it's craziness. My mom told me she was at Kohl's, I believe, when it happened.
Speaking of television and news, I mean, it really was the birth of modern television news. Television was still relatively in its infancy, and when you look back at how much they were able to do on that kind of obviously short, instantaneous, no notice, and put the resources together to cover things the way that they did throughout that weekend just showed such such honor for the craft of American television journalism at the time. And how things have changed. Now, 3 months later, you talk about the age of television, and a nation was ready to recover in some way, shape, or form. And the young people of America helped them do it by turning an entire nation's attention to these four kids from Liverpool, England, who, by the way, on that day, November 22nd, 1963, released an album called With the Beatles. And obviously, it took a while for the shock and everything to wear off, but they showed up on Ed Sullivan 3 months later, promoting the album, which included this cut.
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you.
So that was this day in 1963 that album was released. On this day in 1968, 5 years later, they would release what became known as the White Album, which included singles such as Blackbird, Back in the USSR, and this.
One of the easiest songs to play on piano.
And no less fun. Let's do the birthdays here. Terry Gilliam from Monty Python, 84 years old today. Billie Jean King is 81. Stevie Van Zandt is 74 years old today. Jamie Lee Curtis, 66. Mark Ruffalo is 57 today. And Scarlett Johansson turns 40 today. The number one song this day in 1975 was from Casey and the Sunshine Band.
You ever been to a wedding?
Welcome to the 70s, kids. It was on this day in 1986 that Mike Tyson, you remember him?
Oh, yeah.
On this day in 1986, he became the youngest ever heavyweight champion in boxing history, a record that stands to this day. And that's how I choose to remember him. 20-year-old Mike Tyson, whatever it was we saw last weekend, which is...
People are putting together clips packages of him pulling his punches and like, just what a dumb thing to do.
I know. On this day in 1994, Pearl Jam released their third studio album, Vitalogy, featuring Spin the Black Circle and Better Man. It would go on to become a number one album and sell more than 5 million copies. 1 year later, 1995, Toy Story, the first full feature-length film created completely using computer-generated imagery, directed by John Lasseter and starring Tom Hanks and Tim Allen, was released again this day in 1995. On this day in 1998, Alanis Morissette had the number one album with her fourth album, Supposed Former Infatuation Junkie. This was the first single off of it. Thank You would receive a Grammy Award nomination for Best Female Pop Vocal Performance. This is where Greg jumps in and says, see, she did have stuff after her big album. So,
and good stuff, too.
And good stuff, too. The lowest ever scoring in an NBA game took place this day in 1950 at the Minneapolis Auditorium in front of 7,000 people as the Fort Wayne Pistons edged the Minneapolis Lakers 19-18. That's an actual NBA score. Can you say no shot clock? Because there was no shot clock.
They were all wearing Chuck Taylors, and they're all named Steve.
On this day in 2011, Taylor Swift was playing at Madison Square Garden and brought out James Taylor to let the crowd know that she, Taylor Swift, her parents had named her after James Taylor.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They did 15 and Fire and Rain. Yeah,
wonderful.
How cool is that? On the National Day calendar, it's a pretty short one today. This is National Humane Society Anniversary Day. This is National Flossing Day. I hope you do it more than once a day. Maybe this is just there to remind you to do it every day. This is Love Your Freckles Day. Mm. You don't have to love your freckles. Everybody else is going to love them. Who doesn't love freckles?
People with freckles.
I guess people with freckles, but we sure like to see them on other folks. They're still cute. And this is National Cranberry Relish Day. And, of course, the proper way to celebrate National Cranberry Relish Day is to take a bowl of cranberry relish, head over to the garbage can and dump it right in there, and then open up a can of the good stuff, the jellied stuff with the ridges, the way God intended cranberries to be served.
Hold it upside down and just wait. Plump.
And wait. And wait. Much more in the second hour of Up North News Radio coming up in our 7 o'clock.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.